Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming. I am your host, Shannon Holiday, and I am joined in the studio once again with Letitia Thomas. How are we doing today, this afternoon, Letitia?
We are doing good. We've been productive this morning. We've been getting our life together. Shock horror.
Haven't we just?
Yeah.
What have you been doing to get your life in order today, Tish?
A lot of cleaning. Did the washing.
You did.
Put my sheets on.
Yes.
Put them back on the bed.
Look at you.
It's not 3 goals. p.m. yet. Look at that. What a
bed's
miracle.
Made. Done. You cleaned up your computer files, ready to go. There's nothing better than to have a clean computer file.
Yeah, look, it's only about 90% of the way there.
Don't look at my desktop at the moment.
I don't think I've got anything.
Absolutely full of binge lists.
There is
audio files.
Nothing.
Everywhere.
Look at that. How crisp is that?
Absolutely mint.
It's just a photo of you and I and a seal.
No, I saw that the other day when you had that as your wallpaper. I'm like, oh, I love that. It's us. It's us when we went and saw a seal up at Sunshine Coast.
We need to do another beach trip before the weather
ruins. We've only got
itself.
About a month left before it gets freezing and you can't really go in the water. So we need to pick one of these weekends. We can go. We're 4 weeks in advance.
I know.
We can have a week off.
We can go to the beach.
What's wild? We couldn't do that last year at all. Oh, the stress of doing it every week.
Yeah, we actually should though.
I agree. I've got a car. Just pick a week.
Because I'm getting pale.
Oh no, I miss my tan.
My hair's grown enough that I won't burn my scalp immediately.
No, it's no longer that. It's getting past the fuzzy stage even. It's like getting to real hair.
It's been 3 weeks.
I know. That went so quick,
I know.
Actually.
Sorry to everyone that's listening and has no idea what my hair looks like. It's not thrilling for you guys at all.
For me, I could see the growth because it was like nothing to like slightly something.
Yeah, you're like, I'm like everyone's personal grass head.
Yeah. Have you had many people do what I did day one? Where I kind of like, oh, I've got to touch it. Where you let me do it because we're friends.
No, grandma touched my head last night again.
Oh, she did?
And mum's like, she won't let me do that. And I'm like, no, because people didn't pay enough money.
No, they got to pay a certain amount to
also,
get that privilege.
Freaks me out.
Yeah, I remember when I shaved my head, it was an odd feeling. When you do it yourself, it's fine.
It's fine.
But when you get other people's
you know what it is, right?
Hands through your head, it's weird.
I'm like, oh, like horrifically ticklish.
Oh.
Like I nearly stabbed.
So am I, actually.
Someone at work, because they came up behind me and like,
is it,
and I
is
had
it
scissors.
Along the sides underneath your arms?
Mostly there, but also
is.
Anywhere. And
I will,
just.
I will punch someone.
Yeah.
Involuntarily, though.
Yeah, like I do anything else to me, like torture me any other way, but that makes me.
Cut off my leg.
it like freaks me out to my core. Like, I don't know.
I don't
maybe
like
there's
it
something
either.
There. Who knows? But
there is deep-seated trauma.
Yeah. And then when people touch your hair, they do it so.
Softly?
Gently. I'm like, don't do that.
You're not going to hurt my head. You
just
can
pat me like I'm a dog. It's fine. Yeah.
Simpsons. You got to pat it like they feel it. it's a whole thing. I do want to update the audience. This is Teeth Watch 2024. I remember last episode that I spoke about my toothache.
Oh, yes. I was like, what are you talking about?
Oh, no.
Meant to ask you about this and I forgot. I'm a bad friend.
I didn't go to the dentist. And do you know what happened?
It fell out.
The pain went away. And I seem to think, I discussed this with Ben the other day. I seem to think either the tooth has completely died and the nerve. Or it wasn't that bad to begin with and maybe it was just irritated because there was a bit of popcorn kernel stuck in there for a couple of days. Don't know.
There is a
but
long
I
pause.
But I still haven't gone. It's a long pause for a reason. It's fine. I'm eating all the same foods I was before it hurt.
Look, I just think you're a grown man. You can make your own teeth decisions. But anyone at home,
and
if
I think
you
I did.
Want to bully Shannon, feel free.
If you feel
a dentist.
Like I should, or you know a dentist that isn't going to have to charge my left kidney to go and have my teeth looked at, please let me know. I will actually attend.
I mean, do they want your kidney or is that also wrecked?
No, my kidney should be fine. Wait, which one's the one with alcohol?
Liver.
That should be pristine.
Also,
I'm not really a
maybe
drinker.
Your kidney. What is
kidneys? Isn't that to do with going to the bathroom?
Yeah, but I feel like it has other functions too.
yeah, look, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor.
No, I threw away biology and went and did art, like drama at school. The teachers were not happy.
No.
They were not happy.
As people say about arts degrees, we won't go into that now, I don't think. I did physics and chemistry in high school.
How'd that help you out?
Well, I didn't get the best marks in high school because if we're going down that track, I wasn't really in high school for like academic reasons. It was basically just a reason to stay not finding like any adult job or anything and just hang out with friends. My parents will agree with you. They knew that's exactly why I was there. And I didn't do quite well in either of those subjects. So I actually dropped down chemistry down to what's called senior science and actually enjoyed that a lot more. Because chemistry was quite difficult.
Yeah.
Covalent bonds and hypotheses and stuff like that.
I was much better at biology than chemistry or physics. Physics,
I feel like if I
didn't really
learnt physics now, I'd actually appreciate it and quite understand it and actually get it. But then I wasn't doing enough study of it to get it. So therefore I just turned off, switched
off. Yeah. I want to read a lot of books on physics and time travel, black hole, that kind of whole stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But
time travel gets me.
I need time to sit down and really study that because I just think, I'm not smart enough, but it's been a while since I've read into all that kind of stuff.
I've got a question for you.
Oh, God.
Just off the bat, if time travel were to happen,
yeah,
in which form of time travel would you think? Like what form would it take, do you think, in your head?
Like as opposed to,
you know how it's like
Harry Potter, you go back in time and then you relive that day, or like time travel in like multiple dimension.
Yeah. What do you think?
I want to lean into it more like multi-dimension in the sense of
it splits a timeline.
I think so, because when you think about how you experience time, sometimes you can do something and okay, I feel like I'm a 26-year-old here today sitting here talking to you, but then I'll think about something and suddenly I feel like I'm the 7-year-old kid that I was, and both feel present and real.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that,
yeah,
I want to lean more into that. But realistically, I have zero idea.
Well, no, because the concept isn't realized.
Yeah, but that's...
But that's where you would feel comfortable if thinking that.
I'm leaning more into that, just in the way we experience and feel like time is more in that relativity than, yeah.
Interesting.
What about you?
Mine is, my thought process takes the place from the show Lost. So
I love how ours are both very specific and I've just refused to make reference right now.
Is yours from?
A little bit Russian Doll.
Yeah,
that, but just other things I've watched that are using that principle, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I feel that maybe.
See, the Lost one does the time travel concept as if whatever happened, happened.
Yeah.
So say I went back into the 1960s. Well, in 1960, even in my timeline now, I went back there. Whatever I influenced already happened to lead up to this. It becomes a paradox, but also that's the way I like to think it happens.
I'm also up there with that theory as well, kind of similar to the film we just watched, Predestination, where it's kind of already set.
I love that.
I think for me, both feel pretty... I don't want to say realistic, but realistic in a sense.
It's easy for our brain to comprehend those two more than anything else.
I think so. Yeah. So I'm sort of on the fence of both.
Interesting.
Yeah. If we're going on the fence of time travel.
Time travel. That's fantastic.
I have a story for you actually.
Please tell me.
I feel like you would enjoy this. So last night my grandma was over and then we took her home. And as we were leaving, I opened the door and I go down the steps of her little house because she's in like an old people village. And I see a man standing at someone else's door. This is about 10:30 at night. And I'm like, grandma, someone's up there. And she had the biggest mischievous look in her eye. And she ushered me and my mum into the house very quickly, like all like conspiracy. And what it is what the lady whose house it is, she and this man, Doug, have been having a little romance.
Doug. Oh my God, Doug.
And so he's there with his shopping bag.
Yeah.
And, you know, dead of the night, no one else is around. He shuffles back home. So they're having an old people's romance. It's quite
adorable.
Sweet, but it was so funny. We felt like true teenagers having seen something we shouldn't.
Ooh, watch that. What's happening over there? Okay.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
I love that a lot.
Beautiful, because you don't think you're going to experience those kind of things and then suddenly you just see like 70-year-olds having a cheeky teenage
romance
and you've witnessed it and no one else should have.
I'll be honest, I don't even think about old people even considering connecting with other old people. Like, even if they're, like, now single, mm-hmm. like, then maybe their partner's passed away or something, or they're just never with anyone. You just don't think that it's, like, that's something they strive to get. But I guess everyone gets lonely and stuff, and that's why they try and connect. But
The other week, one of the girls that we both used to work with, her nan came in with a new man, and this new man used to be one of their best friends, and they're all like touchy, and she's like, "Not in front of me, please." Like,
that's awkward. You don't want to see that. It's like if my grandma suddenly like had a partner. She's been single since I've been alive, and she's just been Nana, right? Like she's been by herself. If she were all of a sudden to find someone, it would just be foreign.
It would
be very foreign.
My grandma's very much like always been alone for the longest time. Mm. But the other night she was telling me how she was watching the show with this lead in it. She couldn't work out why he was familiar. And then she realized it was. And I just went, "It's Aidan Turner, isn't it?" She went, "Yes. He's a guy from Poldark." My grandma had such a crush on him. It's so awkward.
Oh, that's awkward.
She referred to him and I don't even want to say it on air.
Please say it.
She referred to him as, "He's yummy." And it just makes me.
Your grandma said that to you.
She's real. Like we went to see.
She's hip.
She is. She for is someone very hip. Who's been alone forever, that woman. We went to see Chicago, the musical.
Yeah.
And she went, "Oh, I don't really know what's going on, but I've been watching all the men because they're all shirtless."
Well, at least you got something out of it, Nan, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Mind you, guys, my grandma will be 77 this year. No, 87. 87. So she's not young.
I think when you get to that point in age as well, you give up caring what people think.
Yeah, well,
honestly get to the point you go, "I've lived. I'm not here to make, you know, impress anyone or anything. If I like something, I'm going to be blatant about it."
You know what
it.
I think it really is more than anything is when we were about 16, we were on a like family holiday to like, I don't know, the beach somewhere.
Yeah.
And we got a couple of wines in her and then me and my sister managed to weasel out all these stories of like boys that she was interested in when she was like a late teenager.
Yep.
So we've kind of got most of the stories out of her. So mum's like, "What? I thought my mum was this sweet, innocent lady."
I mean, we're all like everyone was a teenager once or like young 20s and does the same thing. Like you think you're the first person to like be provocative.
It's
No, there's been generations and generations before you. How do you think like this stuff existed? It's all full circle.
That's been my 24 hours pretty much.
That's wild. Yeah.
Some good stories out of it.
That's great. That's been a great time. Besides that for me, it's just been, I will update. I've been watching something that just got added to Amazon.
Ooh, yes.
Now, obviously when this goes live, it's going to be a couple of weeks out. Fallout. I've been watching Fallout, the new show. It's incredible. Obviously it's based on a computer game series. Very loosely, because the games have so many like intertwining like stories and like where you can take the tale, like if you want to join a certain like faction or something. So it's like it's essentially using the building blocks of the world of Fallout to create a story. And whereas like The Last of Us is very like linear in terms of story, like what happens in the in the TV show is exactly what happens in the game. I'm loving it. It's super gory. It's super satirical. And they've just gotten the vibe of that game perfectly right. And I'm all for it. I'm so far three episodes out of the eight done so far. They're like about an hour long each episode. I thoroughly recommend this to anyone that's kind of, if you like The Last of Us at all and you want another kind of computer game adaptation where you don't really need to know the game at all to get on board, you will. You'll enjoy this.
I think I might watch this. Maybe we'll do an episode on it.
Think so. Honestly, we should pop it in there somewhere because it's very good.
I forgot. I've been watching.
It's got Ella Purcell out of.
Purnell,
sorry. Out of Yellow Jackets in it.
Sorry, I jumped the gun because I remembered what I've been watching this week.
Yeah. No,
I watched season two of Heartbreak High.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. It came out. It was only out like a couple of days ago, right?
Yeah, Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And then I finished it by Friday.
Very digestible then.
Yeah, very, very good. For a second season,
I'm
super impressed. Yeah, I think some things were stronger in the first season, but that always happens in the sense of when you're writing it, the first season is what you've got in mind.
Yeah.
And then season two, okay, how do I match that?
But you've also got less time.
You've got a reference, exactly. But no, they introduced a bunch of new characters this season, which I think they did an amazing job, like introducing a few new ones, getting to get more info of ones you didn't see so much in season one.
Yep.
My main criticism, if it even is a criticism in this season, was there were characters in the first season that I really enjoyed and they didn't get as much screen time, and that's my gripe. And if that's your gripe,
because you've got fan favorites, obviously, and if you don't see them as much,
if that's your gripe for a second season,
not bad.
That's not a gripe.
That's not a gripe.
Is what I mean. Like, it was very good. I've got favorites. This one,
yeah, okay.
I don't want to spoil it because it's only just come out.
Watch it.
But some of the dialogue, oh my god, is hilarious.
Who's writing it? Like, which team is it? Is it fully Australian?
Very much Australian. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of writers, so it's very much a writer's room. So each one of the writers sort of put themselves in it, which is why you get these characters that are fully realized.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Holy shit, is it funny?
That's good. You're getting different perspectives. And it is. Like I think you said, I think in a previous episode about the first season, it's like a perfect representation of what an Australian high school would be like now, where it's like less pandering, more just. Yeah, this is the reality of it.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's so funny. The amount of dialogue references, especially in season two, that are just...
Bang on.
Like, yeah, I don't want to say them because if I say them, it's going to ruin it for everyone as you're watching it. And that's kind of... that. Like, that'll suck if I do that. But holy shit, was it funny.
Like, you might be selling it
to
because
watch it again.
It's in my list. I've had season one in my list since I think when it came out last year.
I just haven't
sat down with it. You know, it's one of the things that's like, yeah, I'll get to it. And then myriad of other things you just put on.
I'm trying to remember. Did you go to public or private high?
I went to a Catholic high school.
Yeah, so you won't relate to this at all. No, it's very much public high school in a nutshell. Like, it's fun to watch because it reminds me of the best sort of memories of being in public high school, which is it's just a mess. The whole thing is a mess. The teachers are a mess. The kids are a mess. The school's falling apart. But it's fun.
It's actually weirdly accurate to a Catholic school anyway.
We didn't do as much RE though.
We had to do religion as a subject, even in our last 2 years of like electives, which is odd. Like, it wasn't terrible. It was fine, but that was the only kind of like religious thing they kind of pushed on you. And every 3 months we had to have a mass.
Oh, is that all? 3 months?
Every 3 months.
That's not really much.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. Like, every semester you had a big mass at like, you know, the start or the end of the semester. Yeah, there wasn't like this thing like once a week. So it wasn't too bad. And it was honestly, there was like our school and then there was a public school down the road. I had many friends at the public school as well. Like the experiences were much the same. It was a really laxed Catholic school. I'll just say that. Our school was still getting built while I was in there.
Oh, same.
So I was the third ever year to go through that high school. So when I was in year 7, we only had 8 and 9. And then when I went to year 8, we had 7, 8, 9, 10. And then when we went up by that.
Right, okay, yep.
And literally only about half the school was built when I was there. But they were using pretty bad building materials. So kids would go out of their way to like try and kick off some of the bricks in that.
Yeah, that happened at my school.
Yeah. And some of the buildings weren't even lasting by some of the other buildings were getting built. It was pretty awful.
No, so my school was so shit and built so badly on black soil that it was falling apart to the point that by the time I was doing grade 8, they're like, we need to build a school somewhere else. Like, we can't rebuild this.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
Let's move it all.
Yeah, my first year in the old school where it was so relaxed. Like, there were no rule, like nothing. And it was perfect.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, like, terrifying, but perfect. And then, yeah, school fell apart. They built a new one, but it wasn't quite built and ready because we had the 2011 floods. So half of our stuff got washed away.
Yep.
So, yeah, they built this new school and they tried to bring in all these rules, but it was quite hard for them to bring in new rules. And I think they've only just started to get that school like the way they wanted it after I graduated.
You've been out for like 8 years.
No. I was the last year from the old school. So we're like, yeah, but like old blah, blah, blah. Was like this, and the teachers got it, but the principals hated it because they were trying to rebrand us as this like, look at us, we have like the fancy equipment. It's like, yeah, but the students suck.
The students are the same.
Yeah.
Like, the core part of this school
literally
is the same.
It was quite wild. No, I've been out for 10 years.
10 years now?
Is it 10? Some of the kids are trying to organize a reunion and I'm not going.
You did say that the other week. You had a 10 years. I had my 10-year reunion. We're coming up to 20 now, but I didn't go to my 10-year because one, I was like, it's only 10 years, who cares? And also it was back, like my high school's not local.
Yeah.
So it would have been a bit of a trip to get down there for that like one evening. So I didn't go, but I might go to the 20th one, which will be in 3 years' time. 2 years' time? 3 years' time.
That's wild.
Yeah, 2027. We graduated in 2007. I know. It's terrifying to think. Some people in our year have kids that are like 10 or 11.
Oh, they would, easy.
It's incredible.
Look, some of my like classmates were having kids when we were still in school. Yeah,
one or two did that as well.
Nah, there was more than one or two. Okay, most of them didn't graduate. Yeah.
This is how we differ.
One kid had a kid in grade 8. Yeah. No, nine, sorry. And her mum was like, oh, can't wait till she has more.
That is some really good generational issues there. I went to primary school with that girl,
yeah. And we were like, ooh.
It's like she doesn't want to enjoy being, I don't know, an adult first because she hasn't quite got there yet either.
Oh, what was her name? I'm going to remember this later. I might have to ask my sister.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. Given that, I think it's about time to get into the topic of this week's episode. Do you want to do the introduction, Letitia?
Yeah, we are talking this week about the one, the only, the insane Taika Waititi.
Yes, yeah. Excellent. I don't mind him as a director. When we picked this episode, I was like, you know what? I've seen most of his films, so I don't have to go out of my way to kind of pick any off throughout the week. And when you list off the films, and we'll go obviously through them in a conversational manner, I thoroughly enjoy all of them, I think, to a degree. And I think we'll go into like what makes him a really stylized filmmaker a bit later.
Yeah, no, I used to say at one point, if there's only one man I'll marry, it's Taika Waititi, because I was obsessed with him for a while there.
I think you're going to have to move Rita Ora on.
Like, I'm good. It was more symbolic.
Her face.
It was more symbolic.
More symbolic, yeah, than anything else. I watched a few kind of like behind the scenes kind of makings of the past couple of days, or last night a little bit, of like him behind the scenes, because obviously he's a filmmaker and he's an actor, but he's more known now as a director of films.
Yeah.
A big part of what makes him a great director is, and you could see it when watching those featurettes, is he's just one of them. He's one of the guys. He doesn't set himself above anyone else like a standard, like, hey, I'm directing you, I'm telling you what to do. It's like he makes a very open set and very welcoming set, and a lot of his stuff's like, cool, don't keep it perfectly to script. If you like go ad lib, let's see how that goes, because that could work some magic into it. So I really like that kind of fluidity to his filmmaking, and I really kind of, yeah, I dig it, and it's clear on screen that it works.
Yeah, I respect him heaps. I remember watching an interview with him, and he was saying that he didn't get into filmmaking until he was about 27, 28.
Yeah.
He had a career. Well, I wouldn't say a career, but he had a long list of jobs before that, and that informed his career, because he knows what it is to be a person. He realized what he wanted to do, what he was good at. Yeah. And that's why he got into it. Like, he was the kid of a bunch of artists who were a mess.
His dad in particular was he was in and out of prison a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But he was an artist. He was an actual painting artist. Yep. So he comes from the creative background to begin with. And it's definitely influenced his career throughout. And I think he said that in one of the interviews I was watching as well, is he, in his early life, he tried to assimilate in with like every kind of like group at high school or school in general, because he just wanted to be liked. And he didn't want to stand out too much in high school, because he was one of the, like, he knew himself, he was one of the smart people. Like, he was, comparatively to school, he knew where he wanted to end up. So he kind of like dumbed himself down and tried to be liked by everyone. And I'm like, that's a huge kind of childhood reflection of what your films are like now, I guess, to a degree, because you just want to be liked.
Yeah, I went to school with a girl who did that. She used to act dumb because she was so smart, but she acted dumb.
Just to be included.
And then she was so funny. She used to lie at home about little things so that when the big things happened, she could blame her sister, because her sister was a compulsive liar. Like, she was so smart.
That is manipulative. Oh,
she's a genius. She used to tell us tall tales.
All the time.
Oh, she'd always be telling you a story.
Yeah. What's she doing now?
I think she's a barista, but she's quite happy, I think.
That's good.
Yeah.
Awesome. I also saw a story where, yeah, like you said, he didn't start real filmmaking till probably like late 20s, early 30s. And he did that, what was it called? The Two Cars, One Night. Mm-hmm. He wrote Two Cars, One Night because he was doing a bunch of like little tidbit TV show parts, so to speak. He was sitting there and he was like, in like a green room or something, ready to shoot a scene. And it was a scene for a show where he has to play a stripper. And he's like, in the view, he's like, I'm not going to name the show. But he's sitting there and he's like just eating some food, ready to do his part, do his scene. He's like, I'm all waxed up, I'm all oily, like wearing these like tight green like G-string, ready to do this like stripper scene. He's like, maybe there's something else out there for me. Maybe there's something else I could be doing. Where he's had this epiphany, and apparently, like, where he wrote Two Cars One Night is waiting to just film a stripper scene.
That's amazing. Kind of thing. Have you seen Two Cars One Night?
I have not. It's on YouTube. Mm. I was about to watch it before we recorded this, but I was like, oh, 11 minutes, I probably don't have enough time.
Yeah, no, I watched this in uni because we studied Taika a lot, because as he was up and coming, when I was in film school.
Yeah.
And this is one, he got nominated for an Academy Award.
I heard about that.
It is such a good film, just about two kids that are sitting outside of a pub,
yep.
Sort of where he grew up, because he used to sit outside waiting for his mum and dad to get out of the pub. And they just form like a friendship and a little like first love. But it's such a simple idea, but he executes stuff in such a beautiful way. And he did a couple shorts. There was another one he did, and I can't think.
It's the one that has Julian.
What it's called? Yeah, with Julian.
Blazed? It's called Blazed.
Yeah, Dennison in it.
Who's it's got Julian Dennison out of Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yeah.
And you would have seen him in Deadpool 2.
That's right.
And he's in Uproar as well. That's coming out this year.
It's out.
DVD wise, yeah.
I do want to see it. Yeah,
so do I. One thing I do want to comment on, and it's definitely touched on in Two Cars One Night, is obviously he takes a lot of his own experiences and life experiences and puts them, he shoves them into every film. And it comes across in like that boyhood wonder. It's a big kind of like recurring motif throughout his films, like that boyhood. Everything's through the lens of like a small child, essentially. If you think of essentially Boy, Hunt for the Wilder People, Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
Like it's all through that lens of like that innocence in a world that's not innocent around them.
Yeah, I love his work and what he does in all of these films. I think because it comes from a place of real like honesty.
Yes. Yeah.
And he was saying like he wrote Boy and it's very much like part of his own experience growing up in New Zealand, because the parents and all of the adults he knew around, they were pretty unreliable for him and all his friends.
They're like so half criminals, but they were also like kids themselves.
Kids themselves. Yeah. And you see it a lot in Boy when the story is of a kid who basically tells everyone and believes that his dad is Michael Jackson. And he said that was an honest thing because all the kids around would just make up all these stories. Oh, where's your dad? We haven't seen him in a while. Oh, dad's off doing this, being a rock star. And all the kids used to try and one-up each other, even though
they knew deep down
where everyone's parents really were. But there was just that childlike thing of trying to make fun of the world that you're in. And I think that's such a cool thing that he captures. The mystical
wonder of a boy's like imagination, essentially.
Yeah, he does this gorgeous
so well
thing in all his films where they have this kind of happy, sad quality that I am obsessed with. Like if I can capture that in some of the stuff I write, I'll be so happy, because they're so funny, his films.
Yeah,
but also they gut punch when they need
to. That's, I think he said that in one of his interviews as well. I think the comedy aspect of it, it draws you in and it allows you to be open and free with what you're watching. And it, like, you know, basically he quote said, he's like, it draws you into this dark alley, but then when it's like you've got a real poignant moment or like this moment of like real raw emotion, because he puts those into all these films as well, it hits so much harder and the audience is not ready for it because they're on this like fantastical journey, you know, of wonder and all that, just to be thrown some realism and grounded actual raw emotion. It's
Phoebe Waller-Bridge used to talk about that, how you can disarm the audience with comedy and then really destroy them with the tragedy when it strikes.
Yeah, I think it's the most prominent and most notable version of this is Jojo Rabbit for me.
Yeah.
And we know which part we're going to talk about. It's the part where most of the time, like it's funny because you're through the lens of Hitler Youth, Jojo, played by this absolutely fantastic young actor. And Taika says, like, how do you get the audience to relate to basically Hitler Youth? Like, how are you supposed to like someone that's not likable? Well, he created the character in a way where he's the bullied kid.
Yeah.
He's got a wonderful parent at home who's endearing, who's loving, and, you know, shows that all aspects of the movie. and you're drawn in, and then I won't go into detail on what happens in.
Oh, we can spoil it. People would have seen it by now. Okay,
yeah. So she's doing essentially like rebellion kind of things throughout the film, mm-hmm. like putting up posters and that against like the German army and what they're doing. And she's housing a young Jewish girl yep. in the roof. And that's the point of the movie, is basically Jojo meeting this girl, and they form a connection based on their differences, basically. Yep. And Scarlett Johansson plays the mother, and she plays this beautifully.
It's one of her best roles,
I think. Honestly, check it out if you haven't seen it. So you, throughout like 2/3 of this movie, you're loving this character. You're actually on board with this young boy, because you like you can see what he's doing. He plays it in such a way where it's like, oh, he's just trying. Like, he doesn't actually believe in what he's saying.
No, he's this little kid who's got an imaginary friend, Hitler, played by Taika. And it's pointing out the ridiculousness of indoctrinating children.
Yeah.
And they do it in this satirical way as well, because he'll be like, oh, and then, you know, the Jewish, they're all like monsters and blah, you know, because it's done that kind of thing.
Lighthearted, silly way.
Yeah.
And even Adolf Hitler, who's played, like you said, played by Taika Waititi, he's played in such a way where he's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even an accurate form. And Taika said that too. He's like, we don't owe anything to this evil human.
No.
We don't need to make it accurate at all. Let's make it silly and fun. And that's what he did. It's an imaginary friend.
And it's like so effective. I remember I read this script years before the film even was realized.
It took a while.
Yeah, because it went to the blacklist, which was like this.
He said he made 3 films in between after he made the first screenplay.
Yeah, and so you could just find it, because I did a bunch of digging, and then I went to LA and I was talking to the people from.
Is this the one you told them about?
Yeah, so I was talking to the guys from Searchlight, and they were like, oh, we're doing this next film with Taika Waititi, and it's about. And I went, wait, is this Jojo Rabbit? and they were like, yeah.
Yeah.
Why? And I was like, oh, yeah. And because I just talk.
Yes, you do.
I was like, oh, yeah, like, I've read the screenplay. It's like, I've read like half of it. It's like weird. And it's like, where'd you find that? I'm like, what do you mean? Where'd you find it?
It's on the internet.
I'm like, it's on the internet. And they're like, can you delete that and give it to us? And I was like, I mean, like,
I can, sure. But also it's on the internet.
Also, I'm not going to. but I did send them an email on where to find it. And I guess they realized it was too late because it remained there. But I remember reading it being like, what the hell is this? Because it's just so ridiculous.
It is very ridiculous.
But then he pulled it off with his magic. And then, the scene you were talking about. So I'd read it then. I knew the scene that was coming up. Yeah,
and it does gut, as we brought it back, like obviously the humor, then obviously real raw emotion, gut punches you when there's a scene and it's beautifully shot. It's
so gorgeous.
One of the best beautifully shot scenes I've ever seen. Jojo is walking through the street and he comes across, like they've been hanging people basically in the town square. And it's only ever framed from his height, right? So he's shorter. He's like, what, like 8-year-old, 10-year-old, whatever.
I think he's about 10.
And it's only ever from the height of his face. And he looks across. I think there's a pair of legs with some shoes on. And he looks across. There's a woman.
Legs, shoes.
Pair of shoes. And the audience immediately recognizes the shoes from earlier in the film, because his mother wears those particular. They're very unique shoes, and it like zooms in on her tying them up at something, talking to him about it. Anyway, you realize in that moment that it's his mother who's been hung.
It's giving me goosebumps, you just mentioning it.
Like, it's so impactful.
It's so haunting.
And haunting, and the emotion just in that visual moment is so full on.
I knew that was coming because I'd read it and I went to the cinemas and I cried so hard. I had 8 minutes to get from that showing to my job across the street. And I got there and everyone's like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? What's happened? Someone died.
I was
like, no, I just watched Jojo Rabbit. It's beautiful. It just came out today. Like, go watch it. Yeah, because I was a wreck.
It hit so hard. And it's a beautiful movie. And that's what he does. If we're going to relate it to like basically him being an auteur, I would say that's the kind of thing he does well, is have that boyhood innocence, really impactful moments of beauty, really.
But also, like, we're talking about how beautiful he is as a filmmaker. But he's also one of the funniest filmmakers I've ever come across.
Yeah.
Like, I think What We Do in the Shadows might be one of the funniest films I've ever seen. And I saw his short that he did.
The one it's based on.
Yeah, so he did What We Do in the Shadows interview with some vampires in like 2005. And it was basically like a proof of concept to see if they could make it
into a movie.
Into a full-length movie with the jokes that work. And I've watched that. It's not the best. But that gave me so much hope as a filmmaker that I'm like, someone as great as Taika Waititi can make something that's okay.
And then improve on it.
Go ahead and make on it, yeah. The funniest film.
It is so funny.
It's, yeah. What's the thing in the shadows.
You always quote to me, werewolves, not.
Oh, werewolves, not square. Werewolves, not swearwolves. Yeah.
Very good.
Peter, we're having a flats meeting in about 10 minutes.
It's so well done. It's just a great concept of a bunch of vampires
in a living share house.
In a share house. And it's done in a semi-documentary style filmmaking technique, which is, you know, it's done a lot now these days with like The Office and Parks and Rec, and there's a bunch of other movies that do it as well. I don't know. This one's just great. It's so
done. Peter got him.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I quote this movie all the time.
Who's the one guy who hasn't turned yet? Like he's the Greg or something? He's
Stu.
Like,
Stu, yeah, the IT guy.
Yeah. He's like the regular dude.
Oh, man.
It's very good. And it's obviously done so well that it actually spawned a TV show in America. It's called What We Do in the Shadows as well, but it's set with a different bunch of vampires. It's seasonal based and it went for like 5 or 6 seasons. So it was very successful. I've watched a bit of it. I've watched about the first 2 seasons. It's different. It's got a different feel because it's very Americanized, but still the mockumentary style, but it's still pretty funny. It's got Matt Berry in it, who's known for the IT Crowd and Garth Marenghi's Dark Space. He's hilarious, by the way. So he just carries that show, but it's in the same vein as the original movie that Taika Waititi made.
Yeah, it spawned 2 spin-offs. So there's also another show called Wellington Paranormal.
Yes, it did too.
Which he didn't have much to do with because Taika was busy.
They're the cops from it.
It's the cops, yeah. O'Leary and anyway, like the 2 cops that come in and they just – it's so Kiwi. It's so cool because like, oh, he's not having a good time, is he? And
it's so.
Oh, don't leave him there on the floor. That could be dangerous. And
just very observational humor. That's so what they're known for. It's like they'll just say something like really obvious about that scene, and it just works. And obviously the accent and the delivery makes it quite funny.
It's just so funny, but then it's also like that romance as well, and you've got the familiar. Played by Jackie Van Beek, who's but they went to primary school together, so they've been friends forever.
Yeah,
and she's just like doing all this stuff, hoping to get turned into a vampire. But she's just like doing their bloody like laundry and stuff. And she's got a husband, but you know, it's so very him too.
Like it's so very him, and it's got one of the Flight of the Conchords is in it.
Jermaine Clement, because him and Jermaine have been working together for almost everything.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk a bit about Hunt for the Wilder People?
Yeah, I was about to get onto that one.
One of my favorites, I think.
This is the one that got me into his filmmaking, essentially. This and Thor Ragnarok. And then we'll get into the Marvel ones a bit later, I think. But like, if we talk about Hunt for the Wilder People, this is what opened me up to like New Zealand comedy, essentially, and exactly what it can be. So Hunt for the Wilder People has got Sam Neill. It's got Julian Dennison in it. And it's also another like a boyhood wonder movie. He's this like what is his quote as being like the bad boy of town, and all he's doing is like spray painting like one
kicking
thing.
Kicking rocks and stuff. Throwing things. I love the actress Rachel someone who's in it. She's in a lot of his stuff, but she's
Rachel House.
Everything she's in, she is so funny.
I've got a fun fact about her.
Just watched her in Heartbreak High, but she's the funniest in this movie because she plays basically he's a kid that's in the foster system.
Yeah,
she plays this cop, and there's that scene where they're yelling at each other across the canyon, and it's like you're like Sarah Connor. No, I'm like Sarah Connor, but in the second one when she got like buff and shit.
Yeah, it's perfect. The New Zealand humor in this is perfect. I had a fun fact about Rachel House, and I only realized this when I was watching one of the featurettes on Jojo Rabbit. Is she was actually the acting coach for the kid out of Jojo Rabbit.
Really?
Yeah.
Is she an acting coach?
She was for him.
That's amazing.
Yeah. They interviewed her during the featurette of Jojo Rabbit, and she was like, he's the sweetest boy. He was so easy to get him to do his scenes and that, you know.
Because she's in a lot of
They're obviously friends. They're obviously got along so well.
I love her so much.
She's great.
She's always hilarious.
Yeah.
And she's in. For anything New Zealand, she's
in. New Zealand, she's huge. Like she's in, Thor Ragnarok. She's actually in Godzilla X Kong New Empire for like 2 scenes, but she's in it.
This film, it's that same boyhood wonder.
Yeah,
so funny
adventure movie.
So funny,
but like also like a fatherhood son movie as well.
When they couldn't get the rights to Happy Birthday, so they had that song.
Yeah, that's true. I love
Ricky
that movie.
Baker. Ricky Baker, once rejected, now accepted by me and Hector, we're trifecta.
Keep going.
You can cut that out.
I'm putting that in.
I skipped a bit of it because it's been a while since I've watched it.
This highlighted Dennison's acting ability as well and really shoved him into the Hollywood stardom with, yeah, he went on to do Deadpool 2. Mm-hmm. He was the bad boy kid in that as well. But basically the same kind of character, just without his New Zealand accent.
I just remember that line when he's like, "Nah, they got this wrong because they said that you're Cook Asian. You don't look Asian at all."
Yeah, he plays it so well. Yeah, yet again, Taika Waititi film through and through. Has the same feel as all the others. Has those poignant moments when it needs to. And it relies on humor to draw you in.
This is the one that really got me into his stuff. Because I actually went to the set of Thor when they shot in Brisbane. And I watched him direct Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston a little bit.
Yeah, the Ragnarok movie.
But like didn't know who he was, didn't care so much. And then went back, heard about Hunt for the Wilder People because that had just come out.
Yeah, they were very close together.
And then watched that and then went back and watched What We Do in the Shadows. And I was sold on this guy. I was like, he's the greatest filmmaker because he sort of came out of nowhere as well.
Yeah.
Like done a lot of work but wasn't recognized much outside of New Zealand.
That was the period of time where he kind of became a household name. Mm-hmm. Like it was because Thor Ragnarok was a revitalization of the Thor series because it needed it. It was tanking. Mm-hmm. And also you could see Hunt for the Wilder People. It was available around at the same time. So everyone was like, oh my God, this guy does great comedy movies and they're really heartfelt.
And I think we needed a good comedy at that time too. Yeah. And their humor's quite similar to ours. So
we get it. Worked yeah. It in doesn't, Australia. It doesn't rely on that usual American like setup, punchline, pause for laughter. Like it doesn't have that. It's more observational humor.
Yeah, it's more real in that it's like, this is life.
Yeah.
And it's tragic. And it's also hilarious.
Yeah, it's making it's
these kids are funny. You know, like that's kind of his thing.
Yeah. Obviously the Thor movies. The two Thor movies, we'll talk about them a little bit in detail. Yeah, Thor was tanking. He was seen as this boring character from the first two Thor movies. He had a purpose in the Avengers 1 and 2 as well. Like he was the strongest who was there. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know where to obviously take the third movie, because the second one was considered at the time like the worst Marvel movie in the series.
That's wild to think about now because it's actually quite good.
Yeah, I know. Honestly, looking back, I'm like, it's not actually that bad. Yeah, so when Taika Waititi came on board, he only got an idea of where he wanted this movie to go and then he kind of injected himself into the movie and it's probably one of the best Marvel movies ever made.
I saw this in cinemas and I had so much fun with it. The amount of references that are specific to Australia and New Zealand as well, like they call like the Commodore and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so great. Good. It's got Cate Blanchett in it. It's got Rachel House in it as well. It's got Jeff Goldblum in it. And I love there was an interview with Taika Waititi and someone asked, like, so how do you direct Jeff Goldblum? And Taika Waititi, you don't.
You just
he's got the same humor as me, so we got along fine. You let him do his thing.
Yeah, and they had Tessa Thompson in this.
Yeah,
and those guys as comedic characters.
Fantastic.
They got what they were doing in this film. It was silly, it was stupid, but it still had the heart through it.
It had his thing.
Yeah.
His magic in a Marvel superhero film.
I remember when I went to a premiere screening of this movie, The Breaker Uppers, that was
I know the one, yeah.
Jackie Van Beek's film. And she was saying, yeah, it was crazy when, you know, you'd call up your friend Taika and he's off doing this Marvel movie and they're like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm not really sure, but they've trusted me with this, so now I'm just going to see how much I can get away with. And that's kind of why the film's so outlandish is because he just pushed it and pushed it and pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And for whatever reason, Marvel said yes to most of the stuff he put in it.
Well, because I think then if we don't try something, we're not going to have, like, Thor's not going to be liked for very much longer.
I think this one was one of the funniest films that they did.
Yeah.
Thor Love and Thunder, though.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the fourth one. It wasn't. I think the issue with this was Thor Ragnarok was such a success. It was a runaway success. Marvel loved it. Audiences loved it. It was critically acclaimed for revitalizing the character. Now they've gone and given him rights to do the fourth one, which is, yeah, do another one. You did so well. Do it again. And he's like, I didn't even really want to do the first one. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
fantastic opportunity, but I wasn't chasing a Marvel film. So then he's been signed up and contracted to do the fourth one again. I don't think there was any love there. And I think even Chris Hemsworth's starting to fall out of wanting to be Thor forever.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone involved was just so done at that point. They didn't care. There was clearly not enough rewrites, probably not enough takes on certain scenes. The silliness was jacked up, I think, past the point of heartfelt, and it just didn't land.
I think people lost a bit of faith in Taika with this one, but yeah. I think you've got to look at the whole perspective. This guy got very big very quickly. Yeah. He had a lot of fun. He had a lot of fun making this film. If you've seen the pap photos, I think he was just a little bit, as people have said, a bit coked up for this one. And just sort of
everyone was a bit coked
lost
up.
Direction. Yeah. Have you seen those balcony photos?
I have.
They're pretty iconic.
Free love. I'm for it.
But yeah, also this one was written by Jennifer Caton Robinson, who went on to do that Netflix film with Maya Hawke. The one from last year.
Oh, Drew Revenge?
Drew Revenge, yeah.
I like Drew Revenge.
So it has this, like, obviously the people that are behind this film are very talented. Mm. But I think, like you said, it was like a runaway train. Everyone was just kind of not really caring to chase it and fix it up. They were just like, you know what? Somehow they've given us a contract. Let's get this done.
That's how I felt like most people were on this. There was no one had buy-in. So therefore, whatever product they put out, they just didn't care. So unfortunately, that's what we got with Love and Thunder. Not horrific, but just not as well received as Ragnarok was.
No, and he's gone on, like Taika's gone on in between to produce a bunch of stuff, to write a bunch of stuff,
even
act in it and direct, mostly TV spots here and there. And I think he's gotten back to where he wants to be and the
which
films
is the
he
next
wants to
one.
Make.
And we've both seen it since. And you only watched it the other day, so let
watched
us know.
It last week.
What did you think about Next Goal Wins?
I really, really enjoyed this one. I don't think it's his strongest film, like I'm going to admit that, but I had so much fun with this one. It's about a coach who he's a Swedish?
I think he's supposed to be Swedish.
He's supposed to be European. He wasn't really in the film, but he goes off to American Samoa, which is not Samoa for anyone who doesn't know.
That's said in the film as well. Yeah.
And then he coaches their soccer team, which are abysmal.
He's Dutch.
Abysmal.
Yeah.
But it's just this heartfelt film of a guy who, you know, it's kind of a cool runnings. Doesn't want to be a coach.
Yeah.
Becomes a coach. Finds his love for it. And the message in this film is a really beautiful one as well. Kind of just like, we're not doing it to win. Just doing it for fun and to enjoy it. And I had so much fun watching this. I think I mentioned to you, I went to school with a bunch of Samoan kids. So I was kind of like familiar with the culture a bit and just, yeah, it was so much fun. It brought me back to being in school and grade eight, all the Samoan kids would hang out in this, what was called a gauntlet, which was just a walkway. but they would scare like little grade eight kids into thinking that we were going to get our head bashed in. But
classic.
Like, and then so you good. Knew them like the next year and you're like, oh, these kids are sorks. Like, they're not bashing my head in. They're just huge.
They're just, they're in some of them, huge. Yeah. I love how this film, it's kind of like a twofold. Like, he's supposed to come in and teach the team how to play soccer, but the team also teach him about family and what it means to be family, because he's obviously going through his own personal turmoil as well, which, you know, is explored throughout the film. And that's what was really beautiful about this film is the sense of community, sense of family that you get from everyone on screen, especially obviously most of the team, and they're just so well acted. It's beautiful. I just think it's a really fun film. Like, a lot of people have said, unfortunately, have seen, oh, it's whitewashing, it's white savior. I'm like, no, like, yes, I can see that trope in there.
But is it white savior if it's based on
real life?
Real life.
Real life.
Not as much.
No, not as much. And Taika Waititi said that as well. He's like, yeah, like, whitewashing's a thing. He's like, you can either ignore it or like play against it. He's like, or you can do what I did and just embrace it. Embrace that. Embrace the story that was told here. And like he said, it's about two things. It's about the community and what he could teach them and what they could teach him.
And if you look at history, like, yeah, okay, it's a bit whitewashing, blah, blah, blah. Like, a white guy comes in, teaches him some stuff. They teach him some stuff. But also, it's American Samoa. Like, they were colonized.
Yeah. There's that whole
thing in it. Yeah. So, of course, there's going to be white savior stuff in it. They've been colonized.
Yeah.
You can't ignore it. And I think kids now and young audiences, because maybe they're so into the internet and chronically online, I don't know what it is, but they're unable to look at things and see two truths at once.
Yeah.
Like, it can be a fantastic film that I think Samoan people probably love to watch and it's fun because they see themselves on screen in a real way. And also you can acknowledge that, yep, in history and now there's still a bit of whitewashing.
Yeah.
Two things are true.
Two things can be true. And you know. Yeah, I think this is a beautiful film. I don't think that was the intent at all when it was being made. I think we just go, yeah, look, enjoy the film. It's not supposed to be anything elevated. It's just fun.
Dangerous to have this outlook on art and films and stuff where it's one or the other.
Yeah.
You have to look at things and go, like, again, two things.
Life is grey.
Can be true. Life is grey. But it being a bit whitewashing doesn't negate the other stuff it's also
exactly
doing. Like,
right.
What are you going to do? Just
agree.
Not tell this story?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's not whitewashing.
No.
You know, like, sometimes a story is just a story.
Yeah. So that's when I'm glad that he kind of addressed that when he was kind of speaking about this film, because that, yeah, not intent at all. And it's available on Disney Plus now. I'm so grateful that they've kind of got it somewhere anyone can see. So if you're listening and you want to have a fun film and just, you know, you don't have to think too hard, you're along for the ride and you want to have a laugh, definitely go check out Next Goal Wins.
Yeah, it's I really enjoyed it. I'm excited to see what Taika does next because I finished reading this week.
I was going to speak to you about the next part.
Clara and the Sun. So they've been shooting it, I think, the hope is it's out at the end of the year. So hopefully that'd be good. But it is the story of a young robot girl, Clara, played by Jenna Ortega. And these AI's purpose is essentially to be a companion for young kids. So the kid that picks her is Josie. And this girl's sick because she's been like lifted, which is this kind of thing where some of the kids, when they're young, they're sort of enhanced in a way to elevate them, but then there sort of leads to like defects in some kids. It's a big part of the plot, but it's also like not a big part. It's kind of just the fact that she's sick. And so she has this companion, but it's told through the eyes of this robot girl who's quite intuitive. And so she starts off in a shop with a shopkeeper who's Natasha Lyonne. So that's,
yeah, I saw
and
that,
then,
the name listed.
Yeah, and then she goes to this family, so then it's her learning how to do stuff with family and get on with the girl and her mum, who's Amy Adams.
Yeah.
And then sort of later there's more family stuff with like the dad, Simon Baker, and then it sort of tells you where Clara ends up way in the future because she's a robot, so she doesn't
die. It's like that Bicentennial Man thing with Robin Williams, which I think, one, is a beautiful movie as well.
And it's
very similar by the sounds of it.
Clara and the Sun, because the robots are powered partly by the sun. So she has this special relationship with the sun, who's a little bit personified to her as a robot.
Right, okay.
Girl. But it's got a gorgeous feel to it. And Taika didn't write this, but I can see him doing this film so beautifully.
How he can do it as his own.
Like, it makes sense that he's the guy directing.
It's a person by Darby Waller.
Based on the book,
yeah.
Yeah, which went gangbusters. So I'm really keen to see his new stuff. And obviously he's doing like a bit of Star Wars and things like that.
He does have a Star Wars standalone movie in the works down the track. I don't know when or where that's going to come out or what even it's even about. But he does want to create a Star Wars thing.
I'm more excited for his like quieter films because I think that's where
his indie style non-studio work is his best work.
Because it's personal to him. I think he cares about it a lot more. I think he has fun doing the big paycheck jobs because who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly right.
And like, yeah, gets to be in Star Wars.
It allows him to do more of his indie work.
That's it,
Because he, you know, do one for them, one for me kind of thing. He gets the money so he can create the stories he wants to create. So I'm looking forward to the stuff that's on the horizon.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think he might be one of my favorite directors.
A lot of fun.
And all writer directors.
Yeah.
But let us know what you guys think because we really love him, but we'd like to know which performances you like and, you know, his films and stuff. But
Yeah.
As always, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at BingeList. Also TikTok.
TikTok now.
BingeList. Or you can email us at bingelist@boxofficehits.gmail.com. Thank you guys for listening and have a great week.
Thank you guys. Bye.
Bye.